number your side of your paper 1 through 10. All right. I'm telling the folks upstairs they can roll the tape, as I understand it. So welcome to class. How many of you were here for the class I taught on stories, so I don't know if I need to do my introduction again? Okay, I guess I do. All right. If you're at the right class, this is Jeannie Olson. I'm Jeannie Olson, and this is Life Review and Reminiscing. If you're not in the right class, I will not be offended if you get up and go to the literature class or Larry's class or whatever, but that is this class. Just to give you a background of who I am, I have been a chaplain for 27 years in Davenport, Iowa, Genesis Medical Center. We have 4 campuses. We have 8 chaplains. We are the Center for Clinical Pastoral Education, which is to train seminary students and pastors on how to do hospital ministry. So I mentor those at least 2 students a year. I have been with the cancer unit of my hospital for the 27 years that I've been there, and that's probably where I feel most called. I also, at this point, have the neurological floor also. We as chaplains do on-call duty, so I'll be covering a night or a weekend where we'll be called in for deaths, for codes, for traumas, for a baby that needs to be baptized because it needs to be airlifted out, because someone's being taken off of a ventilator and they know that the patient is going to die, for families who are in any kind of trauma or drama or death that a chaplain needs. It's interesting because some people say, oh, I don't want to wake up my pastor in the middle of the night, so they call us and wake us up in the middle of the night. But, you know, it's all part of what we get to do. I don't know of many people who love their job as much as I do. I love being a chaplain, and the thought of perhaps retiring in a year, I think, oh my gosh, who will I be if I'm not a chaplain? Every day I get up, and I'm glad and grateful to be able to go to work. And I say to my children, love what you do. Life's too short not to love what you do, so hopefully they're loving what they do. What I'm going to ask you to do on these pieces of paper, and those people who just came in, you need a piece of paper, and you need a pencil, and you need everyone to write 1 through 10 on the side of your paper, going down the side. I didn't do that, right? All going out? Okay. So much for PowerPoint. Anyone else need one? Okay. On your piece of paper, and you have numbered 1 through 10, this is about life review and reminiscing. And the background for this class is we want us to understand the older adults in our lives better than we do now. And so in order to get to the life review and reminiscing and why it's really important in our journey, we're going to think about what it's like to grow older and why we need this. So this is the background. I'm going to be having you do 2 kind of experimental sort of activities to get into that. And the first we can do kind of in the dark. In fact, I think I might open this. Maybe it'll help. Can you see this? Can any of you see this? All of you see this? Okay. What I need you to do, and not in order, is to write down 10 of the most important things of your life. Now, if you happen to do, 10 are all people, it's not going to work as well for this. So I would suggest you not just list, mom, dad, your 5 kids, and, your nieces and nephews. Look at this. You don't have to choose from this. If there's nothing on here that would be on your list, just make your own list. Very quickly, just start writing. Sometimes your subconscious is
best. Is it just for yourself?
Just for yourself. What are the most important things in your life? Is it your spouse, your good health, your home, your children, you love to travel, your independence, your faith, your financial security? Write them down as they come to your mind, and not in order. Well, if they are in order, okay, but you don't have to. Only you are going to look at this, so. Okay. Anybody else? Anybody not done?
I'm not yet.
Don't think too much.
Aha!
Okay, here we go. Now, usually when I do this, I really did think there was going to be 4 people in the class, so I was going to plan it differently, but then I thought I'd better be just in case. What I usually do with this is I give you 10 pieces of separate paper because I have you then turn them in one at a time, and I'll explain that. What you have done is write 10 of the most important things in your life. As we grow older,
And as we have losses and griefs in our life, some of the things that we value the most disappear from our lives. And so what I'm going to ask you to do, and what I would say now, okay, you're older, and you choose what that is. Please don't say 65, because that's what I am, and I don't think that's old yet. So let's envision yourself lots older, and all of a sudden things are changing in your life. You don't want them to change, but they're changing just by the virtue of getting older. So what I would have you do is have to hand me two and put it in a basket, and I'd go around and collect them, which really means you are having to hand them over, and they're gone. But because you are a bigger group than I anticipated, I just want you to have to scratch out two of the things on your list. Put a line all the way through it, and think in your life, that is now gone from me. Any two, cross it out. They are now not part of your life. Okay, you've adapted, you're figuring out how to do life without these two things, and now you're getting older and things happen again. Huge change in your life. Cross out two more. Cross a line all the way through them. Now, you are not liking me at this point. And if I was coming around with a basket, you would be glaring at me, and you already are kind of glaring at me. Because this is really awful. Okay? This is really awful. All right. Now, life doesn't really work like that. You don't really get to choose what departs from your life. So now you're going to hate me even more. But sometimes that is what we do. We really hate life and what it does to us. So I want you to take whatever is on the top of your list and whatever is on the bottom of your list. And if you've already crossed those out, find the next adjacent one and cross it out.
Yeah. Crossing out just one?
Two. I'm going to Larry's. Okay, I know that. I know you want to leave, but don't leave. Please, don't leave yet. All right. Now what do you have? Four left?
Yeah.
All right. Usually I take people down to two, but this is kind of an aggressive group. I want my job back again. So I'll just say, cross out the one that's now the most in the middle, and then stop. Oh, cheapers. People are groaning. Okay, I won't make you do any more.
Okay, good.
Now you have how many left? Three? You have three left?
I have four.
Three left? Okay.
I'm doing four.
All right. All right. Tell me, I already know how you feel about me at this point, but tell me what's going through your head. What are your feelings as you had to do? Paul, you're ready to speak to me, right? Or walk out, which is it? Here.
I think part of the awfulness was having to choose.
Yes.
You recognize yes. that losing any of these are awful.
Right. But having to choose. And life isn't like that. You don't have to choose, right? So maybe I should do this differently and say, cross out number one, cross out number four. Would that have been better? Because that's more what life is?
When the top and the bottom won't win, it was the piano for the kids.
Oh.
But tell me more of how you feel.
We don't want to face reality.
Okay. Don't want to face the reality of that could happen to you.
It could happen.
It could happen.
It's not going to happen. We live in the mentality. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, but life happens.
It just makes you think possibly it's all downhill from here.
Well, okay. What else? Yes.
I didn't happen during this process, but it happened getting ready for the class. I was thinking about my favorite candy bar. Excuse me, my favorite candy bar, which is it's a German chocolate bar, and they say it's Halbgibbel. It's half bitter. It's 50% bitter chocolate, the other 50% is sweet.
Yeah.
And as soon as you got me past the 50-50 here, I thought, there goes my chocolate.
Yeah. Exactly. And isn't that what happens as we grow older and as we go through the griefs of life? You feel ripped away. You feel ripped in half. Some of you have lost a significant person in your life and had major, major difficult things happen. And that is a great illustration of things being ripped out of you. Now I'm going to ask you, move a little bit beyond this and think, okay, what about my parents? Did they go through this? Or my grandparents? Or my old aunt Nana, Nina, who I love and who, can you transfer that then to the people you love and the things they've had to face in life, even though many of us haven't had to face these things, thank God. If they're on your list, they're still part of your life. So that is the background. Jerry, I'll go ahead and let you turn this on. Now can you see why I told you not to put just people on your list? You'll have this until you lose power. The first thing is just a cartoon, which I'm going to read. But while we're waiting for it to come up, I think the next time I do that, I'm just going to have people cross them out. I think that's probably a better idea. But having to choose really is terrible. Yeah.
It's a very good exercise.
Well, it was evident by your faces that you were grieving just having to. And you think about, okay, what if this really happened in my life? This is just an exercise. So.
But the point is, you don't get to choose.
Okay, yes it is, I'll take it. Okay, this is from Eric Erickson, who I am not an expert on, but I love the stuff, in fact, Bill would be if he was here, right? I love the stuff that he gives us, because the experiences of profound loss in our lives as we get older are huge. Material loss, for example. How many of us have watched our parents move from the 5-bedroom house to the 1-room condo to the nursing home? We have a dear college president who had this 5-bedroom house and then moved to this condo and then moved in the end to a nursing home where he shared a room. He was a brilliant man, and he said, "My life now consists of this bookshelf of books." And he was reduced from that to this. So huge losses as far as homes. When my father finally decided, I don't think I can drive anymore. I've lost that independence. Possessions. This man who had a library, a room was a library, have now been reduced to 25 books. The possessions that have been surrounding us, that are part of our travels, that are part of our lives, are disappearing. The relational losses. Some have lost spouses. And we know two of my best friends. One lost her spouse in September, and one lost her spouse a month ago. 70 years old. To me, 70 is not old. When one of these friends walked into a room, the place was energized. So relational losses. Children, oh my gosh, you can't imagine what it's like to lose a child. But my in-laws did, and I know they were affected for the rest of their lives. Whether we're losing friends or siblings, I have a dear friend who's 91, and he says to me, "Jeannie, all my friends are dead. I have no one to play golf with." The fact that he could play golf at 90 is pretty amazing. But all my friends are dead. I have no one to play golf with. The relation, the one's image of the world and oneself. I think I listen to sometimes the older people that I talk to at the hospital, and they'll say, "I don't get the world anymore. It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand the technology. I don't understand the selfishness. I don't understand." And their whole view of the world and themselves, they simply can't connect to the world the way it is now. Functional loss, the ability to participate in life's activities. How many times have we talked to somebody, maybe here at Holden, who said, "I used to hike the trails, and now I can't anymore." And how hard that is. Or I used to be a downhill skier, and now I'm using this walker. I mean, there's so many activities I can't do anymore. In fact, one of the activities, it's not on there, the next one, enroll a loss. A couple that left here a couple days ago, I could tell they were sad all week. And finally I heard the story, and they said, "Well, will we see you next year volunteering?" And they said, "We can't volunteer anymore." Mm-hmm. volunteer. And it was, you could physically tell they were carrying the grief of that loss of role. For sure the vocation was gone. As I said, I don't know how I'm going to cope a year from now when I'm not a chaplain. I mean, that's who I am, besides Paul's wife and Eric and David's mom. I'm a chaplain. What will I do when I don't have that vocation and that role and that title? And the social customs and mores. I think of patients that I've had talk to me that says, you know what? I love rituals and I love traditions and I love... And my children don't even come home on Thanksgiving. They go skiing and they come home and have pizza. What is this? People don't sit around a table and say grace and carve a turkey and then share what they're grateful for. I don't understand all the changes in life. So there's loss after loss after loss. And I think that thinking about those is hugely important in studying those folks. Okay, you can put that away. That was your hardest thing. Now you can relax from now. But now I want you to do another kind of, let me see if my cartoon is the next thing. No, it must have gotten lost. Okay, put that down, and I'm going to have you do an experience of what it's like to be older. I'm going to walk you through kind of a fantasy and tell you what I want you to envision. It'll take about 2 or 3 minutes, probably at least 3. And I want you to choose how old you are. And so I'm thinking, you know, 80s, 90s, 100, however you want to do, but old, not anywhere near 65. All right, I want you to close your eyes, and I want to have you picture yourself old. I want you to look in the mirror and see your face. Look up and see your hair, the color of it, the style, and then look in the mirror and see the body that is standing before you. Look at the clothes that you have on. Look at the shoes that you're wearing. And now look at your hands. Open them before you and see your hands. Have they changed? And what are they doing if they're doing something? Now visualize where you are. What's the environment like? Is it your home, a different apartment, a nursing home, a hospital? Look around you and see the things that surround you, and perhaps think of the things that are missing. Think as you are sitting there now what your needs might be, getting in touch with the things that you are doing or can't be doing. And think of the feelings that that brings. As you are sitting in this place, there's a knock at your door, and a visitor asks permission to come in and visit you. You invite them in. You are the author of this visit. You determine who is visiting you and how the visit unfolds. And I'll give you a few moments of silence to let that happen and unfold. Now the visitor must leave. What do they say to you? How do they negotiate leaving? What do you do? What do they do in response? They have now walked to the door and closed it. And you are there sitting and thinking about the visit and the visitor and your reaction. Very slowly, and when you are ready, open your eyes. Feel. What'd you see? What happened? Anything? Yeah.
I was grateful that someone listened.
Would you talk lower so we can hear you? And the tape.
I was grateful that someone listened, came and was with me and listened.
Great. So you were able to share some stories and great. So you had a good visit. You liked the person. Did you know the person?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. What else? Say a little louder.
I was disappointed and sad that it was over.
Yeah. Because it was a meaningful visit? Because you didn't know when you'd see them again? Why?
Yeah. Because I didn't know when the next time would be or because it was so precious. And
okay.
I wanted it to last.
Do you mind telling us who visited you?
It was one of my daughters.
One of you? Okay. Very good. Yeah. All right. Anybody else willing to share? Yes.
I was hoping that I didn't do or say anything that would discourage them from doing the visit again.
And coming back again. I've heard two of you saying, hoping that somebody returns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to share that. Anybody else? Did you have an aha moment as you went through this experience that you didn't know you were going to have? You'd go, oh, I didn't know that would happen. I didn't know I'd react that way. Or I learned something that I would use when I visit somebody from the church or one of my great aunts.
I have a father that just had an accident. He broke some bones in his jaw and in his eye. And we have to take him to Harborview, Seattle on the 17th. And that's just right after this trip is over. But I think my dad's looking forward to the fact that I'm going to be there. And we have all this time together. So, so I'm going to make it a really fun time for him.
What
so,
a neat thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can reminisce about stuff.
There you go. There you go.
Then it helped me to look at this whole thing more positively.
So, okay, yeah. The things you're learning to then be able to see him and his life in a new perspective. Is that what I hear you saying?
Well, I mean, I keep in touch with him every week. You know, I call him about an hour a week and try to get there, but it's like 3 hours to get there, and I work full time.
Yeah, that's hard. So your visits to him as these two people are really precious.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. So, and we all have people like that. One thing about getting old, many people don't feel like they're old until they get ill. And that's when that life changes so drastically. That was true of my in-laws who were in their 90s, my father-in-law who lived to be 101. They didn't feel old till they weren't mobile or till they got sick or they were not able to function the same way. I had a 90-year-old that said to me, I am young among the aged. I don't have old ideas. I look old, but inside I'm quite young. And I love that. I mean, that I thought, ooh, I remember that. That's who I want to be. That's who I want to be. Eric Erickson also said in the eighth and final stage of human development, in this eighth stage, the aging look back and reflect upon their lives. This is a time for telling one story. You came to my last class. When the aging share experiences from earlier years and seem to be 6 or 9 or 13 years old, they are not simply dwelling in the past. They are attempting to confront and cope with unresolved issues and concerns for a lifetime.
Wow.
He's great, and he's an expert, and I agree with him, but I'm going to add a lot more that I think life review and reminiscing is all about. And this is certainly one of them, and I'll give an example of that, too. It's more than that. One of the reasons that you do life review and reminiscing is the joy of it. If you can't read this, I will read it to you. How's it going, Homer? It's gone. Was his response. Maybe you slept on it wrong. It's all gone. My back hurts, my hip is sore, my knees ache, my joints are stiff, my feet are swollen. Maybe you overslept. I'm trying to answer for it. And I can brush my teeth in my hands. And then he says, maybe you overaged. He says, wine and cheese just get better, but they put an expiration date on milk. Now, you know, we don't. They don't put an expiration date on us. We don't know when it's going to come. Unlike the milk that may get tossed, we live with that ambiguity of when is the end coming for us. And it's not always easy. I think stories and reminiscing and life review are also, besides what Eric Erickson said, are a time to look back on your life and know that it had meaning and purpose, and I made a difference, and the world is a better place because I was there. To me, as a chaplain, that's what I see most. Perhaps people going to Eric Erickson or a psychiatrist or a psychologist work on that other aspect that was listed as number one, but for me, I see it as a time to say life for me was significant. Because I like to teach by stories also, I went up to one of the floors and said to the staff, who needs a chaplain? I don't see every patient on my floor, but I try and triage who needs me. Some people don't. So the staff person said, oh, there's a crabby old man down in room 32. Go visit him. So I walk in, and this man is in his middle 90s, I'm going to say, and he has the covers up to here. And he's looking at the TV set, and I said, Mr. Smith, may I come in? I suppose. Well, that was an entry, you know, that's an entry, I was going to take it. So I went over and I walked around his bed and I looked at the TV that he was looking at. And it was on the History Channel, it was about the Great Depression.
Oh.
And I said, I've not been through the Great Depression. I wasn't born then. So did you experience that? Knowing perfectly well he did.
Yeah.
Did you experience the Depression? He goes, yeah. I said, can you tell me about that? That had to have been a really hard time to grow up. And he paused, and he sighed, and then he said, yes, it was a hard time to grow up. And he started talking about his life and what he had to do and how far he had to walk to school and the little jobs that he had to get money to help mom. And as he started talking, his arms came out from under the covers and he started getting animated in his story. And then he went for his button for his bed, and his bed, which had been flat, was now moved up. And so now he was sitting up, the covers had dropped, and he was talking with great gusto about his life. It was wonderful. The CNA, the certified nursing assistant, walks in and says, now, what have I called him? Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith.
Okay.
Yeah.
She comes in and says, Tom, how are we doing? He clams up, says, fine. I said, I think we're doing fine. Thank you very much. Well, in the story, I've now gotten to, and I thought, okay, I've lost him. In the story, we had gotten to the place that he's the president of the biggest bank in Davenport. He had a mahogany desk that, you know, we would have used as a stretcher at the hospital because it was so big and wide. Everyone called him Mr. Smith. He was on boards. He made major decisions on every committee that he was on, and no one called him by his first name. So when she did that, what was she doing? Demeaning who he was, while he was in the midst of telling me the stories. So I said, Mr. Smith, you mentioned that you had four children and that they started to go off to college. Would you tell me more? Who doesn't want to talk about their kids, right? So all of a sudden, he takes the breath again, and he's going to go forward, and he tells me the story of his children and what they did and the accomplishments and the boards that he was on. And as he did this, his face just radiated with joy. He slowed down his story. Maybe it was 45 minutes to an hour later, and he said to me, I had a good life, didn't I, Chaplain? Thank you for letting an old man reminisce. I will never forget him. That was probably 20 years ago. But his face in doing this life review and reminiscing and the joy he got from telling the story. Because now what was he to the CNA? He was a crabby old man in room 32. He wasn't a crabby old man in room 32. He was a man with a story, and he was a man with a beautiful story. And the closer he got to the end of his life, the more he needed to be able to be recognized for who he was and what he had done. People look at older people as less than, but all of them have amazing stories. So the importance of life review and reminiscing we are getting to now. In America, what are one of the things we often say to people when we meet them? What do you do? What do you do? We want to know what people do in the real world. Up here at Holden, you know, you could be working next to somebody, you know, washing the showers, and they, you know, they could have a PhD in mathematics. You don't know. We all come here, and there's this wonderful village, but eventually you kind of find out who people are in the other world. But how important that is for older people to also be able to say what they have done. I think telling stories, some people may say to me in the hospital or wherever I get a chance to talk to people, you know what I did in life? I raised three of the most amazing children ever. And now they went off to college and they did this and they did that and they did this. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the bank president like this fellow was. But it's how we feel we have added to the world. And if we feel like what we have done or what our children have done have made the world a better place, to be able to tell another person that, the beauty of that. Sometimes people need to tell stories to resolve conflicts, going back to what Eric Erickson said. And the example I would have of that is my father had his mom died at 32, and my grandfather, who I didn't know, was probably not the nicest, and he wasn't the best. In fact, he probably was pretty awful father. And so my dad, who had taken time, and I'll talk about this later, to write his own story, decided he should write his dad's story. So he did as much research as he could about his dad and wrote out the story on his, in his, my dad, in his 90s, he did this, on his word processor. And he, I knew he had done some healing when he titled the story, "My Dad Never Had a Chance." He figured out that the reason his dad wasn't a good dad was because all of these things in his life that made his life pretty impossible and pretty tragic. And no wonder he didn't have a role model and know how to be a good dad. So yes, sometimes the telling of the story helps resolve difficult times. People also tell stories to resolve fears. I touched on this when the telling of the stories. We had a patient who was... I asked them fat questions, I asked them feeling questions, sometimes I asked them history questions. And I said to this person, have you ever had anyone in your life that have had cancer before? You've had another tragedy you've had to get through? And the person said to me, oh yes, when my dad 30 years ago had cancer, the pain was the worst thing. I watched him die in excruciating, agonizing pain. The fear was, that's what's going to happen to me. But by telling the story of his dad, the fact got out. I could say, let's talk to your doctor. Things have changed in 30 years. So sometimes it is getting rid of the fears that people carry. Sometimes people tell stories and do life review and reminiscing to prepare for death. And that is often the faith story. I wonder how many patients I have had who don't have an active spiritual church life now, but they'll say, you know, I was baptized in the Lutheran church when I da-da-da-da, and then I went to catechism. I had an AIDS patient who was the most obnoxious, awful, verbally abusive patient I've ever heard. And he was telling me his story once, and he said, I went to Sunday school as a kid, and I know who that is. And he pointed to the cross we have on the wall with the victorious Jesus on it. And I said, I didn't know you had a faith. That he said, yes. And Jeannie, when the pain gets too bad and I can't bear it and I wonder what's going to happen to me, I turn to him for strength. His faith journey story wasn't big. I went to Sunday school as a kid. But he knew, and he put that together with the journey now as he saw his life ebbing away. So many times it's going to be a faith journey. My dad wrote out another story that told the story of his faith and how he was taken to church and how so-and-so did this and how God intervened here. So sometimes, and it's interesting how people will be willing to tell that story. So sometimes life review and reminiscing is about preparing for death. So stories are more than they sometimes begin to be. Stories are sometimes more than they look like initially. There was a man who was dying. This isn't my story. There was a man whose father was dying, and he said to his son, you know, we got that tree out in the middle of the field at the farm, and this gentleman had cancer, and it was internal. And he said, you know, that tree, it's dying. It's rotten on the inside. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, this person who was his son was happened to be a chaplain. He said, it's rotten on the inside, and it's dying. I don't know what we should do about it. And he was having to make a decision whether he was going to go on to a vent or not, because he had lung cancer. And he said, you know, do we let the tree just fall over and die? Do we chop it down, or we prop it up? Well, this time the son knew that this was a story with a metaphor in it, and that he was the tree, and he was rotten inside. And do we keep the tree propped up with the vent? Do we chop it down, or do we let it die in its own? He said, you know, it's out there in the field. It's not going to hit any buildings. I guess we should just let it go when it's time to go. And his son said, Dad, are you telling me a story about you? And he said, he said, do you want to be on that vent when the time comes? We should know. He said, no, the tree has to go and the tree has to go. You know, had this son not been aware of metaphors and how people tell stories and use metaphors, he might have missed the whole thing and just knew it was a tree that was falling down. But stories are oftentimes so much deeper. In Western society, you know, older people start to tell stories, we go, oh, gosh, he's living in the past, not in the reality, et cetera, et cetera. In Eastern societies, or in the Native American, stories were looked on what? With reverence and wisdom. And I think we've lost some of that in our society. And that's why I hope, and that's why I love to teach this class, because hopefully all of you will take something from this class. In fact, as I was praying for this class, I said, Lord, just bring the people here who will glean something of it and take it out. And if they affect, you know, one other person with something they took from this class, you know, you will have blessed this class. So that is my prayer for you. Life review and reminiscing can also ward off depression. They have found that people who tell their stories or write their stories are more engaged in life and have far less depression. And have less isolation. I have to tell you about my dad. My mom died at 88. My dad was alive at 89, and he was devastated. My mom was his best friend. Well, in the same retirement village, he met a lady who actually looked like my mom and was 100% Norwegian like my mom and only wore skirts and hated bananas just like my mom. It was really uncanny. And my dad had been writing his story and he had it all typed out, and it was just, you know, it was one of his favorite, all-time favorite possessions. For sure. He said, Evelyn, you have to write your story. She said, I can't write. He said, you tell me your story, and I'll write it down. And so she began telling him her story, and my dad would write it down. Well, when I finally got it, it was like this tall of legal pads, and it would say, on page 7, you have to turn to 1A on the 28th page and insert it. I mean, it was just a mess. But every evening after dinner, they would go back to my dad's apartment and work on these volumes and these chapters of this story. Finally, I knew that something had to be done with this, so I took evenings and typed this thing. Well, then her family got involved, now that it wasn't a mess anymore, and they gleaned family pictures, and they gleaned pictures of the church that her father had been a minister for, and pictures of the family, and then put it together. And then she was an artist, so she drew some things. And the buried back was a picture of my dad and Evelyn. And then they bound it, and she got to give it to each of her children and her grandchildren for Christmas. I know there was no greater gift given or received in their lifetimes than the story of Evelyn and her life with her husband and how they met, and pictures and stories about the children and even meeting my dad. It was a treasure. So I have been keenly aware of that, and so now the ways that we tell stories, oral, okay, you get someone, you sit someone, when you're in your dad in the same car, you say, Dad, tell me about it, and you get the oral version. That's great, but how do you keep it? So if there's any way that you can record it. Now, my father-in-law, my dad was really willing to do this. He's pretty verbal, and he was glad to tell the story. So I have dad telling stories. My father-in-law is a very reserved Norwegian and just wasn't really thinking this was a good idea. So I said, Rolf, would you like a glass of wine? Oh, good idea. This is a good idea. I hand him a glass of wine. I put the tape recorder over here where he really couldn't see it, and I just sort of pushed the button, and my husband was in on this. So I said, now, Rolf, tell me about your childhood. So he started telling the story. So in his own voice, we hear him telling the stories. So if you can do that. Now, sometimes if you set up a video camera, especially older people are going to not like that. If you can hide the video camera, that's, you know, an even better idea. But to have those stories on tape is an amazing thing. Sometimes, and I've had some of my volunteers at the hospital do this with patients, especially hospice patients, and I did this with my AIDS patients because they were getting weak. Those are in the days before the triple cocktail, which kept them all very well, and they were dying. And I would say to them, would you like to write your story? Or this hospice befriender did this. And she would write out the story. Tell me about your early life. And nowadays, you'd bring in your, you know, your computer and you just type it as you went. But in those days, I would go back and write it down and then bring it back and we'd proofread it. And we did this till we finished the story. And I remember I had one African-American patient and I said, okay, George, we got the story done. You've proofread it. It's all good. Tomorrow I'm taking your picture and you better look good. He goes, okay. So the next day I came with my camera to take his picture to put on the cover of his story. And he was an African-American and had this beautiful African-American orange and black and yellow shirt and this turban on his head. He was sitting there just like this. How do I look? I went, whoa. The sad part of that story is I took that picture that day. When I left work, dashed off to Walgreens to get them made. He had read the story. We had put it together. We had made copies. I was on call that night, and I got my pager went off. And they said, Jeannie, George is not doing well. You need to get back. He's dying. I raced back as fast as I could. And I'm gluing the pictures on the thing as I'm driving. I got there, and the nurse said, you missed it. But there I stood with his kids, and I said, this is a gift to you from your dad. He wanted you to have his story. And this is the picture we just took this morning to put on it. You can only imagine. You can only imagine. What I know about my life is my children don't know who I am. Our children don't really know who we are. So we have to tell our stories to tell who we really are. They, there's mom, you know, that's dad. They don't know who we have been and who we are on the inside. Another way to get people to tell their stories, and this I just love, because my two of our dear friends who live up in Washington, their dad was dying of cancer, mom was living, and so the kids came home knowing this was getting near the end, but he was still very coherent and doing very well. So they got out the pictures and the albums from their own childhood. And they started telling stories about when they were kids looking at pictures. Then how did they meet? So then they have the album where they finally have met and then the wedding. And they're telling stories. They're laughing and they're crying. Then they get the pictures where the children had been born. And they start telling stories about the kids. Later on, the kids are telling stories mom and dad have never heard. We have stories we haven't told our parents for good reasons. But at this point, you tell the story. For 3 days, they laughed and they cried and they laughed and they cried. And if you ask my two friends, what are the three most important days of their lives? Those are the 3 days. Those are the 3 days. Because everybody got to do the life review and reminiscing. What's that for?
Is that dinner?
Dinner. All right. My dad also wrote his faith testimony. Did I already mention that? That he just wrote, how he got where he got as far as his faith journey. So there's illness stories that we talked about before. There's work stories, there's family stories, there's faith and meaning stories. And I think one of the other ways to get someone to tell their story is our olfactory memories are better than anything. And so you say to someone who's older, what's the smell of your childhood that you remember most? And, you know, it could be the outhouse, but it also could be my mother used to bake apple pie every Saturday. Or she'd bake bread, and we'd smell that coming out of the window and run in to get, you know, our cinnamon and sugar, etc. Great way to start a story. What are the favorite smells or what are the awful smells that you recall in childhood? This one says, don't ask grandma about old times if you have anything else to do that day. And I think you can't really see, but she's smiling. And I think of the joy that has been brought to her because those kids have been able to hear those stories. And so I would say that, first of all, listen. If you're here at my session before, just listen. If you're going to give feedback, only give positive feedback and never ask why. If you're asking why, there's nothing they can do about what happened back then, and you don't want them to feel like you're judgmental about their life. So don't ask why. Just give positive feedback. You're for sure not going to have to say much. If you can, get to the feeling level. I remember my father told me that when he was a little boy, he was an only child, and he was taking a sleigh out to the farmhouse of the relatives on Christmas Eve, and the sleigh fell over, and his only Christmas present was a drum, and it got smashed by the sleigh. I said, tell me about that. How did you feel about that? So we got to talk about the feelings of that and the fact that his dad wasn't there because his dad didn't come to Christmas. So the one feeling about the drum went to the feeling about dad, went to the feeling about childhood, and it kind of expanded. If you're visiting someone who isn't family, remember you're a new audience. They may have told these stories to their children and go, oh, dad's telling that story again. But if you're visiting someone from your church or somebody in the hospital or somebody you haven't known very well, the new neighbor that just moved in, you're a new audience. And so they are so excited to be able to tell these stories again as a new audience. And the last thing that I would suggest, and I wish I had known this sooner. I mean, you know, I think, God, I'm getting into the end of my career. Why didn't I do this more? You know, you teach what you most need to learn. I realize that. Is you can say to that person, what wisdom would you give me? Isn't that neat? I mean, most of our kids don't say to us, Mom, Dad, what wisdom do you have for me? No, they don't. But if you say to this person, you've lived a long time, you've been through a lot, I just love your story, and I so admire you, what wisdom do you have for me? My guess is 110% of the time, they will smile, they will take this seriously, and they will share the wisdom, and they will never forget that you asked them that question. Never forget that you asked them that question. Roy Schaefer, one of my befrienders, said, he stopped befriending when he was in his 80s. So you can imagine. He would get up. My befrienders come once a week. They're there from 9 to 12. They visit patients. We have chapel first. They visit patients. They come down and we debrief them. So into his 80s somewhere, he quit befriending because of his own health. But he said to me once, old people's stories are the most beautiful artwork in the world. Isn't that great? Old people's stories are the most beautiful artwork in the world. Impression without expression leads to depression. We have to reflect on our lives. Impression without expression leads to depression. We need to get these things organized in our lives and allow other people to do the same thing. What is the essence of me? Who am I? And who have I been? And who am I now? And how have I made a difference in the world? Have I made the world a better place? One of the best things about Grandpa is that everything reminds him of a story. And I think when you're with someone, one of the things I do when I walk into a hospital room, or I would do if I was visiting someone in a nursing home, is I'd see if they have pictures up. Oh, these look like they could be your grandchildren. Tell me about them. I don't have to work myself into a conversation. They've already taken off. Everything reminds him of a story, and pictures, I think, are one of the things that do that. And my last one, is it here? Oh, it is. Okay. This is only the second time I've done PowerPoint, so I'm feeling really very modern.
Now you know what you're going to do when you're done.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Family Circus, my second favorite. Better or for worse is my favorite cartoon. This is my second. I'll read this to you. Grandma, how long were you and Grandpa married? Oh, not long enough, Billy. He's bringing in the picture. Oh, he's really good, isn't he? Brings in the picture. Okay. And then it says, do you hear, Al? You hear that? I sure hope. I'll be back later. And now her husband, who is deceased, has come and put his arms around her with a little heart up there saying, Billy, somehow just talking to you about Granddad made me feel a lot better. It brings that love close. I get to tell the stories about my spouse that isn't here before, and I feel better. I wonder how many times as a chaplain someone says to me, I'm sorry you had to listen to that, but I sure feel a lot better. I'm going to say that, and I'm sure already do to you when they get to have that sacred space. And I really do believe it's sacred space because people are sharing with you at the most intimate level. They share their story. Questions, responses.
Yeah, I was just going to say that my grandmother didn't have a lot of words, but toward the end of her life when she was losing so much, she went through the dishes and she gave them away. All of her grandchildren, got a piece for Christmas.
Oh.
And on the back of each one, she wrote, like, who she'd gotten it from or how she used it. So, like, I got a plate, and she told me who it was from and then how she used to bake white sugar cookies and serve it on it.
Oh.
And so she didn't realize it, but her giving the dishes gave her an opportunity to tell stories that we hadn't heard.
In fact, the class I'm teaching tomorrow, which is The Dying Person, that's an example I use of how people get, as they get closer to leaving, give us a gift. There's a Jewish saying, in case you're not here tomorrow, there's a Jewish saying, I'm giving this to you with a warm hand. And that's what she did. She gave it to you while she was alive, so you got to see the joy and hear the story. I mean, it's so much better to give things away with a warm hand. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Share, please. Or questions?
My mom is 99, and when she was out one day and out at our house, and we were sitting on the deck, and I went and got a cookbook that I had in her handwriting, and it was one of those notebook cookbooks, and I said, Mom, let's just go through these recipes and tell me who the best recipe was.
Oh.
And it was really fun.
I bet.
We didn't get all that far.
Yes. But think of the joy she had in being able to tell you that, just like the dishes.
Right.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. Absolutely. Thank you. Could you talk a little louder so they can catch this on tape? You know, everybody's got to tell their story somehow, and if you want to make it up.
But I think in many cases, my wife will accuse me of that. I always say it's just embellishment. She said, you lie. It's inventing the truth, and it's great joy to do that.
Well, and maybe there's just a little bit of humor in that. So you know what? Humor is a good thing, too. So, yeah, whatever works. Thank you. Anybody else?
Jeannie.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, even my life, me and my dad, we didn't always see eye to eye on things because, you know, we didn't understand each other. But when my mom died, I think we became more aware of how much alike we were.
Oh, wow.
And so the thing that's been really interesting is, you know, I've finally got some help so that I don't have the depression like I used to. And so now my dad sees me and sees, oh, there, you're not... You know, you're all right. No, but I mean, and also then we've been able to talk about his father, and then he was talking about, because he didn't have a good relationship with his father, but he said that his father, as he remembered, his father didn't have a nice mother. And so I think he's starting to see that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like my dad said, my
dad really?
Never had a chance. You put those pieces together, and you, in the process, learn to forgive.
Yeah.
Paul?
Well, the insight I had from the little visualization we did is I was also visited by one of our daughters and the one who is going to be a pastor. And it was such a thrill to hear what was going on in her life. And so when we talk about stories going both ways, I think there's something there too.
Absolutely.
Both that like any conversation, somebody tells a story and it reminds somebody else of something. My godparents are 99 and 94, and they're 74. So I'm writing to my aunt from here because I can't call her to say, do you know what's going on at Old Man? And she loves to hear about her.
Yes, absolutely.
It's living vicariously.
Yeah. And there is a time in a conversation which the person says, now tell me about you. Well, then you know they really do want you to.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, anything else? We have 1 minute. Otherwise?
Yes. When is your class tomorrow?
6:15. Here. 6:15 here.
What's the
and if some people are leaving, they're on tape, right?
They're on tape.
And what I'm doing there is I'm talking, as a chaplain, I get called to the bedside of people who are dying. And what I really believe is it should be able to be the family who's there by the bedside and feels comfortable being present to that process. So that's why I said on there, you know, knowledge dissipates fear. So hopefully I'll be able to teach you enough about as that process gets closer to someone dying or is actually at the time of dying to be able to be comfortable with it. Person should be able to be looking in your face, not the face of a chaplain they've never met before. So hopefully we'll talk about things like giving things away and that sort of thing. So thank you all so much for coming. I expected three, and I'm delighted you were all here. So thank you.